2012 marks the 40th anniversary of the Endangered Species Act, and we've been highlighting a different aspect of that act each month. And for October, we're looking at one of the species that teetered on the brink of extinction, actually, the whooping crane. Happily, through hard work and successful collaborations, they're making quite a comeback, and we're talking about it today with a couple of guests for you. David Lopez has been with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources since 2005, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Last year, you joined the Bureau of Endangered Resources. One of his main activities and duties is to serve as the Whooping Crane Eastern Partnership Coordinator for the state. And David, again, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Also with us today, Joan Garland, who is the outreach coordinator for the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo. She's active with the Whooping Crane Eastern Partnership. She's accompanied the Whooping Cranes on their migration from Wisconsin to Florida. She provides education programs along the flyway and more recently coordinates outreach near the species wintering area along the Gulf Coast. And Joan, great to have you with us. Thanks for coming by. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And if I'm not mistaken, just a couple days ago, we had some young whoopers begin the fall migration.
That's correct, yes. Just this past Monday, we had six young whooping cranes that were released at Horicon National Wildlife Refuge. And these whooping cranes are part of what we call the Direct Autumn Release Project. And these young birds are going to be following older cranes to learn the migration route south. So we're pretty excited. The release went very well, and all six are currently at Horicon.
And on their way. David, yeah. You know, I think it'd be interesting to talk a little about the history of the whooping crane in North America. And can you give us a little of that? And what brought them so close to extinction?
Well, habitat destruction and hunting were the main two factors that that were really influencing their numbers. Back in the early 1940s, the numbers had plummeted to around 20 birds. There was a non-migratory population in Louisiana, and the main population there, it's called the Aransas Wood Buffalo population. It migrates between Aransas National Park up in Canada and down to, Wood Buffalo National Park up in Canada to Aransas down in Texas, which is the only population that's been continuous throughout the history of the whooping cranes in North America. So those numbers were down to below 20 back in the early 1940s, and then through a lot of conservation efforts, those numbers started to rebound. And then in the 1990s, we started projects of trying to reintroduce the separate populations of whooping cranes, first in a non-migratory population in Florida, just so that you can kind of spread your wealth around hedge the bet. It's not good for any species to have one isolated population in case disease or some natural disaster breaks out.
A hurricane,
for example.
Which could have, that come a little bit later or caught those birds in migration. That could have been... wipe out a lot of them. So where did the impetus for the reintroduction come from? I mean, just a lot of concerned people or?
Yeah.
Joan,
For the reintroduction efforts? The reintroduction is part of a recovery goal to eventually downlist the whooping crane on the endangered species list from endangered to threatened status. In order to downlist the species, in addition to the population that David was talking about, the one that goes between Canada and Texas, the recovery also calls for two reintroduced populations, one a migratory population and one a non-migratory population. So the population that is released here in Wisconsin was started back in 2001 as part of one of the goals of this recovery plan.
Very cool. Our guest today, David Lopez from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, Joan Garland from the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo, talking about whooping cranes. You can join in. Let me give you the number. It's 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or comments, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page, at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you there. Maybe you've got a photo. Do you ever take a photo of a whooping crane? If you got one, put it on the Facebook page. Let's take a look and see. But anyway, we'd love to hear from you. Nick in Green Bay, by the way, is online, so let's go to Nick. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah, thanks for the stream, Larry. It's nice hearing from home. My question is, I see them all over the place, but what caused them to be on the endangered species? Like what predators or what, mm-hmm. what was the reason for them to be on the list?
Well, primarily habitat destruction in the wetlands. They rely on wetlands for both feeding and breeding activities. And a lot of wetlands in this part of the country and throughout the country and in Canada were filled in and turned into agricultural fields. So the whoopee cranes that hit the population hard, also a lot of commercial hunting. Obviously, they're big white birds, and their feathers are very beautiful. They stand out like a sore thumb. They were used for commercial hunting. People were using them for meat, but also the feathers garnered a lot of money on the market. So those two factors are their primary influence in driving their populations towards extinction.
Mm-hmm. And I think there were some real definite... were some people who really fought to get people's heads turned away from those feathers and using them in hats and so forth back in the 40s. There was a woman who was very... I'm blanking on her name now. I shouldn't have even brought it up because I can't remember her name. But along with that, and frankly, something like the Federal Duck Stamp Program probably didn't hurt.
No.
Because there were how many million acres of wetlands were purchased?
Off the top of my head, I don't remember, but yeah.
I think it's like 5 million acres, something like that.
Yeah.
So it's a lot.
So yeah, anything that's restoring the wetlands and draining those farm fields, or filling the farm fields back in with the wetlands, anything like that where we're doing habitat restoration is going to help a lot of species. I mean, a lot of those game species that have benefited from the duck stamp and so forth also benefit non-game species such as the whooping crane.
Absolutely. Nick, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And Bill in Spring Green, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Larry. Hey, just the subtle irony here. I'm driving down Highway 14, Northern Iowa County, and I see two whooping cranes sitting in with a flock of about 200 sandhills. Turn on the radio, and you guys are talking about whooping cranes.
We set that up just for you.
That's great. And so, Joan, are they a part of those hoopers?
Most likely they are part of the flock that has been reintroduced here into Wisconsin. This time of year, we're starting to see the sandhill cranes and whooping cranes are starting to gather up in larger numbers in preparation for migration. It's great that you saw that sighting. We encourage folks when you see a whooping crane, we actually have a reporting website. We definitely would love to hear from folks that are seeing whooping cranes out there in the field. If you have photos, obviously try and stay in your car. Don't approach the cranes if you are taking photos of them. But definitely report them to our reporting website. The website's rather long, so the best way to get to that reporting website is to go to the Bring Back the Cranes website, which is bringbackthecranes.org. And from there you can get hooked up with our reporting website. So.
Judith, have we got that? I think, Judith, we have that up on our Facebook page, haven't we? Yeah, we've got that on our Facebook page. So if you can go to the Larry Mueller Show, you'll get a link right to it. So that's a good way to do it. Most people who listen to the show are pretty comfortable and know right where to go to get to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Thanks for calling, Bill. Appreciate it. And an email from Chris. By the way, let me give that number again because we have open lines. If you have a question or comment as we talk about whooping cranes with our guests, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Talking with David Lopez of the DNR and Joan Garland of the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo. Great to have them along, and thank you for listening in. Email from Christine in Oak Creek. Just wanted to mention that we were at St. Mark's National Wildlife Refuge in Florida a couple weeks ago. Spoke to a staff member there. She said they were really looking forward to seeing the whooping cranes when they arrive, and also told her we had seen a few in the Cedar earlier this year. Thanks for the show. So, is there a fair amount of cooperation that goes back and forth between here and there?
Absolutely. As part of this reintroduction process here in the East, there's actually about 9 partner organizations involved in the reintroduction effort. And of one of those partners, of course, is the Fish and Wildlife Service and the refuge systems. So we work very closely with the wildlife refuges where these birds are found here in Wisconsin, being Nisida National Wildlife Refuge, Horicon National Wildlife Refuge. And then down in Florida, there's the St. Mark's Wildlife Refuge and Chazahowitzka, as well as several other refuges along their migration route as well.
And as we thinking about it, when did we start that migration? It was 2000 what?
2001.
2001. And I mean, since 2001, how successful has this been? Pretty successful, I would think.
Well, it's been successful. You know, our goal is to have a self-sustaining population where we're not reintroducing birds on an annual basis, where we can they're reproducing at a level that sustains them, their own population. We're not there yet, so I can't say it's been completely successful. But we do have over 100 birds now, 110 birds, as latest count, in our population. So on average, the trend has been for upward growth, and going to have to continue with those releases where we're doing the direct autumn release or the ultralights and leading the birds down there. And we're experimenting with other release methods. But in the near future, we're going to have to continue to releases to make sure the population continues to grow. We've expanded our release areas as well. But overall, you know, we're learning a lot, and overall, we're going to the right direction. So.
Hey, I mean, in the 40s, we had fewer than 20 total.
Yeah.
And this integration program has only been going on, what, 6 years? So I think that's pretty darn good, to be honest.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, we have over 600 birds total in the North America now, about 450 in the wild. Yep. So it's not great, but it's a lot better than 20.
When it was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gary in the town of Ween, let's turn to you next. Hi, Gary.
Good morning, Larry. Great show, as always. This spring, for the first time, I went to Nisida.
Yeah.
With a couple other folks, and it was just awesome down there, and we got to see three whoopers. We weren't sure at first, but then they have this great new visitor center there, and the people in there were very good and, you know, knowledgeable and friendly, and we pointed out what we thought was one, and they said, oh yeah, there's one in that area, and we got to see three of them that day, and just put in a plug for that in the Nisida Wildlife Area. Besides the new visitor center, they have great trails, and we saw just oodles of different wildlife that day. Congratulations to the people who have done all the good work to get the whoopers back.
Thanks, Gary, for calling. Comment, Joan?
Yep, just thank you very much, Gary. Absolutely. The folks at Nisida and Horicon Wildlife Refuge have really done a tremendous job in their education efforts. We encourage folks definitely to explore some of these wildlife refuges. There's, of course, hiking trails. The folks at the visitor centers can get you set up, and hopefully you'll have an opportunity, like Gary, to see the cranes. Just to mention, too, most of the birds will be still in Wisconsin pretty much until about the end of November. So there's still a good month here, you know, to get out and see the whooping cranes and sandhill cranes in our state.
And to identify them, I mean, there aren't too many birds that look like them.
Not too much, no, not in this state. The whooping crane is quite remarkable. It is North America's tallest bird, so it stands about 5 feet tall. It's a good foot taller than the sandhills that we have here in Wisconsin. It is completely white except for its, you know, black wingtips and a red patch on top of its head. So, yeah, it's pretty unmistakable.
Yeah, and in fact, as somebody said earlier, they will land with the sandhills and then, you know, kind of mingle with sandhills a little bit. So they're pretty easy to tell apart.
They are.
Yeah.
Probably the most difficult part is when they're in flight. Because especially at this time of year, the sandhills are a very light gray color. And on very sunny days like we have today here in Madison, the sun reflecting off the bird's feathers, it can make the white and the gray feathers difficult to tell. But again, it's mainly the size of the whooping cranes.
David Lopez, Joan Garland, our guest today as we talk with them about the whooping crane. Come back. I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about the whooping crane today with David Lopez of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and Joan Garland, Outreach Coordinator with the International Crane Foundation. Thanks to them. Thanks to you for listening in. If you have a question, call us 1-800-642-1234. Or go to my Facebook page. You can post a question or a comment there at the Larry Mueller Show. Suzette in Milwaukee has a question, so let's go to her. Hi, Suzette. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So this is very exciting to me because I ride horses with some friends in the Waterford area and have boarded a horse there for some years, and we ride in the fields and the woods all the time. And this year, this fall, I was riding and some large white cranes scared the daylights out of the horse I was riding. And I was talking to my girlfriend about it and said, you know, I have never seen a white crane. What is this? Is it an albino, you know,
yeah.
is it an albino sandhill crane? And she said, oh, no, no, those are young sandhills. Are young sandhills white, or are we seeing whooping cranes, probably?
You see whooping cranes probably if they're that big. You know, there's other larger white birds out there, but if they were cranes and they're large and white, they're whoopers.
Okay, because I didn't know at the time to look for the red head patch, but they were pure white like a swan, and there are a number of them out there, probably four at least that we've seen.
Probably the best things to look for with the whooping cranes is if you can see them open their wings, as they have those very black wingtips. Other large birds that resemble whooping cranes, like egrets, they do not have, you know, the black wingtips. Another way you can tell egrets and herons apart from cranes is egrets and herons are able to perch in trees. You'll often see them on riverbanks, on like low-hanging branches. Cranes physically can't perch, so if you see a perching bird, it's most likely going to be a heron or an egret. And then also to be
they're a lot smaller.
They are quite a bit smaller. They're about 3 feet tall as compared to about the 5 foot tall whoopers. And the juvenile sandhill cranes, they are going to appear more of a rusty brown color.
These were pure white for sure, but we'll have to observe other things. And then if we confirm that that's what they are, we should report them on that website.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Suzette. Appreciate the call. And if you, at the International Crane Foundation, there are some whoopers?
There are, yes, absolutely. At the Crane Foundation, we have a pair of whooping cranes in a wetland setting. So definitely invite you to come to the Crane Foundation and see the whooping cranes we have there. We're also unique in that we're the only place in the world where you can see every species of crane, so all 15 species of cranes.
Been there many times. It is really a fascinating and just a fabulous place to visit, and I highly recommend it. If you haven't been there, better get over there and take a look. Dick in Platteville. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Larry. I was just recently retired school teacher. I taught for 33 years, and I taught seventh grade science, and the last 5-10 years or so, I followed those whooping cranes on the web, and we were always very curious as to whether or not these that were, you know, led with the ultralight managed to successfully breed in the wild. That seemed to be the biggest problem. I haven't been able to follow the last couple of years since I retired, and I was just curious, have any of these birds actually completely reproduced in the wild where they've succeeded?
Yeah, we've had lots of birds have laid eggs, and then we've had 5 chicks in the wild that have actually been raised to fledge, so when they were able to fly on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So although not a lot, we have had some, and some of those birds were from the ultralight. Some of them were, I believe, from the direct autumn release, at least one of them, so both release methods have produced individuals that had been capable of reproducing naturally in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not a lot.
No, we're getting.
But it proves it can be done.
Yes, we get a lot of nests being made. We have a lot of issues, and we're still trying to figure out a lot of the specifics of what's going on with our poor reproduction. Part of it's predation, part of it's nest abandonment, and we don't know if it's. There's all kinds of factors that could possibly be in. We're still looking at, but not a lot. But we're getting there.
I guess I wonder: is there a point where you'll come to the conclusion that geez, they're just not going to do it?
Well, I suppose at some point that could be possible, but we're certainly nowhere near that yet, and we're still moving forward and gaining knowledge, and you know, our population overall is growing, so we're moving in the right direction.
Awesome. Well, keep up the good work. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Jim and Rhinelander, it's your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi. So I guess you've answered my question. I saw Southern Lang Lake County a few weeks ago. I saw a large white crane along with a group of sandhills, and I was wondering if they traveled together or if I was seeing maybe a sandhill in a white phase or something, but I guess I saw my first whooping crane.
Quite possibly. There's in the Midwest population, so Wisconsin, Michigan, sort of the whole Midwest population of sandhills, we figure there's probably around 60,000 or so, and that's you know, Ontario, this whole area. So there's quite a bit of sandhills, of course, in the Midwest here, compared to there's about 110 whooping cranes now. So, you know, the chances of seeing a whooping crane when you do see them in the wild are pretty remarkable. So, again, we encourage you to report those sightings.
Well, you know, I will go on the website and report that. And thanks. That was my other question, is how many whoopers migrate through here. So,
yep.
And, hey, I'll tell you, Southern Langley County, in the farm areas around Antigo, I mean, it's really concentrated with whoopers, with sandhills at this time of year. There's flocks of thousands.
Yeah, it can be quite dramatic. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's worth going to look at that. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Jim, for calling. And Corey in Princeton, hi, thank you for calling.
How's it going?
Great.
My question kind of touched bases on the last two callers' questions, though, regarding when there are whooping cranes with sandhills. Do they leave that flock eventually and pair up and mate with other ones, or are they just kind of stuck there by themselves as loners?
Oh. David, what do you think?
A combination of both. I mean, eventually most of them will pair up with another whooping crane. When they start breeding and laying eggs and nesting, they will go off on their own and establish territories. Often when they're younger, they'll just kind of explore their surrounding area from around where they were released and beyond. Oftentimes they mix in with a lot of sandhill cranes. A lot of times they'll migrate with the sandhill cranes. So it varies from the age of the individual and the particular individual, but you'll see, you know, especially during the breeding season, you'll see the cranes a lot more isolated and away from other cranes. But towards the fall migration, especially when the sandhills are starting to bunch up like this, you'll see whooping cranes start to join them.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate that call. We had a Facebook question from Betsy, which is kind of what was on my mind as well. She says, I've always wondered if there's any noticeable effect on the current whooping crane population stemming from the fact that they were all descendants from about 20 birds. Are there any traits that are known to be lost? Is the loss in genetic diversity a problem?
Yeah, very good question, Betsy. And definitely the whooping cranes did go through a genetic bottleneck, essentially. We estimate when their population was down to about 16 individuals in the Rancis wood buffalo population, that there were probably about, of those 16, about 6 to 8 pairs total. So absolutely, we did see a bottleneck. Within the captive breeding centers where all of the cranes are coming from for these reintroductions, we keep, very, very close, very careful, records and stud books, essentially, they're called. Within the centers, we do every year, certain cranes are not released into the wild. For instance, they're held back for genetic purposes, for genetic breeding. And so, yes, to answer your question, we have seen this genetic bottleneck. But within our breeding centers, we're pretty much doing everything that we can to ensure as much genetic diversity as possible.
Sam in Berlin, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a question about the White River Marsh area. There recently has been a habitat opened up for whooping crane restoration, migratory crane restoration project. We have a lot of hunters in that area because it's right next to public land. And I've heard a lot of comments about giving tours on the land under hunters, around hunters. The ultralights actually came right next to me while I was dove hunting. I didn't think that was very smart. I was wondering maybe if there was a better way to maybe control some of that.
All right. David, let's turn to you.
Yeah, well, obviously hunting out there, there's multi-use properties out there, like White River Marsh. We are establishing the ultralight planes, as you identified, have been moved to White River Marsh now in an attempt to establish a breeding population there, in addition to Horicon National Wildlife Refuge and Nisida National Wildlife Refuge. It's something that we're always taking into consideration is other hunting activities out there. It's really hard to avoid, all hunting activities. There's, the seasons spread throughout the year, different seasons. So, but it is something that we can certainly pass along, and I appreciate you, notifying us that could potentially be an issue.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for calling, Sam. Appreciate it. Jen in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Jen. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I have a comment and a couple questions. First of all, I am just so proud that Wisconsin is a center for the reclamation of the whooping crane. It's just such a good thing. Secondly, in sighting cranes in flight from a distance versus a heron, I've made the observation that I think is consistent, and I'm just checking on that the crane always flies with its neck straight and the heron always flies with its neck in an S shape. Is that an accurate observation on my part?
Absolutely. Yes, you are correct. The cranes will fly with their neck and legs completely straight out. Herons and egrets, their legs will be straight out, but as you mentioned, their necks will be crooked in an S shape.
And the other question I'm concerned about is, I understand there's a movement in Wisconsin to start a hunting season on sandhill cranes, and why do these people want to kill everything?
Go ahead, Joan.
Yes, you are correct. Back in this past February, there was a bill proposed for a potential sandhill crane hunt within the state. It was not voted on during the spring legislative session, but there's a good chance, of course, that it could come back up again. But as of this spring legislative session, it was not voted on.
I think there is a season in, the Dakotas, is it? Yeah.
There is, yes. The western population of sandhill cranes is considerably larger than the population that we have here in the eastern flyway. In total, there's about 650,000 sandhills in North America. And of those 650,000, close to about 550,000 are in the western population. So several the western states and Canadian provinces do have legal hunting seasons on sandhill cranes. But again, that population is quite a bit different than the ones that we have here.
Okay. It's been quite a success story, too, the sandhill cranes. They are the most abundant crane in the world now, but they've come back quite a bit, too, and benefited from habitat restorations and everything like that. There are hunting seasons being proposed or established in the eastern population as well, and it's just something we're going to have to deal with through education and outreach, letting people know that there are whooping cranes out there and to make sure that they know, as all hunters do, they should know what their target is. Before they pull the trigger.
And thanks again for calling. I appreciate it. We had a Facebook question from Kay in Wisconsin Rapids. Will you be talking about the Operation Migration Live Crane Cam, which we didn't, I think we did mention that a bit, but it's an amazing opportunity to witness the ultralight assisted migration to Florida.
Absolutely. There's right now, of course, Operation Migration, who is a project partner in this reintroduction. They are on their way south. They have five whooping cranes right now with them, and they're currently in Illinois. They do have a crane cam that is essentially on the ultralights where you can witness these birds in flight. And again, I believe there's probably a link here to the
Larry
Miller
Show. Yeah,
we
have it on our Facebook page.
And then also I should mention in the springtime, closer to summer in June, at the Crane Foundation, we also have a video camera on the chicks that are hatching that are going to be released into the wild. So it's another good opportunity to see these sort of behind-the-scene footage that you normally wouldn't get to see. So absolutely check out the Crane Cam right now that's going on with Operation Migration. And this coming summer, hopefully you can witness some of the chicks hatching as well.
Yeah, and if you we keep the WESEP, which is the Whooping Crane Eastern Partnership, the acronym for that. We do have our Facebook page as well as our website, and you can link to that from our website that Joan mentioned before. But Operation Migration does a fantastic job of updating their migration daily, so if you're interested in following what they're doing and getting some dialogue and narrative of what they're doing as well as looking at the camera, if you just Google Operation Migration, you can find their website as well, or go to that link that you have up on your page.
And thanks again for calling. By the way, you can join in, too. We still have some time here at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions. I had a Facebook comment from Andrew. He and the wife went to the Crane Foundation, loved it. Still looking at pictures and listening to calls we recorded while they were there. When we left a mile down Shady Lane, we saw 60 sandhills and a couple of hoopers. Also saw that what we thought were juvenile cranes. Is that possible? We also see cranes at the wetlands by Madison Sanitation Plant.
Great.
Joan?
Yes. Well, first of all, I'm glad that you enjoyed your visit to the Crane Foundation. To answer your question, you most certainly could have seen some juvenile sandhill cranes. It can be difficult from afar at this time of year to distinguish the juveniles from the adults. They're essentially the same size. However, the juveniles don't yet have their red patch on their head like the adults do. So the juveniles still have that sort of brownish coloration to their head. So if you see cranes right now in the wild, if they do not have that red patch on top of their head, most likely you're viewing the juveniles.
Just to add a little bit more, since we're talking about juveniles, so one confusion that we often get is that juvenile whooping cranes do have brown on them, unlike the adults. They have brown throughout them, so they're brown and white, essentially. And so they can look a little bit more like sandhills, so that's something to be aware of as well.
And Stephen Wapaka, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. My question is, I guess I have a couple of them. How big an area does a nesting pair of whooping cranes need to be able to be established in an area? There's one question. And then the other question is, since whoopers and the sandhills are flying together, I was just wondering if they crossbreed at all. So, and I'll take my answers off here.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take the second one. That's an easy one. No, they can't crossbreed. They're different species, so they can't produce any offspring whatsoever. And then I'll let Joan take the one. No, I'm not sure either one of us knows the answer off the top of our heads.
David and I are both looking at each other with confused looks. With the nesting question, that's a very good question. Unfortunately, I don't have exact territory sizes off the top of my head. It does depend. For instance, the last naturally occurring wild population that breeds up in Wood Buffalo National Park, up there, they have a much larger territory size than, for instance, the ones here that are breeding at and near Nisida National Wildlife Refuge. I'm sorry, off the top of my head, I can't quite remember that number, but it does vary quite a bit from Wood Buffalo to here in Wisconsin.
So it's kind of a function of how much land they've got to operate
to operate
and
with.
And the food source, food quality there. And they're only going to need to go as far and establish as much territory as they need to get the sustenance and the nutrition they need.
So what do they eat?
They're omnivores. They have a wide-ranging diet. They'll, pretty much anything. Frogs, insects, dragonfly larvae, they love those. But then they also eat roots and tubers of plants, seeds, berries, small mammals, snakes, you name it.
Yeah, and down in the south, when they're wintering, they rely on blue crabs a lot, too. That's one of their main food items. So that's an important food item down there to monitor those populations.
Yep, absolutely. The ones that the wild population that goes down to the Texas Gulf Coast, as David was mentioning, that is their primary food source for the birds when they're down there in the winter. Not only does it help them to survive during the winter and provide a high source of protein, but it also ensures that when they return to their nesting grounds in Canada in the springtime, oftentimes there's not food available quite yet in the spring. So they fatten up on those blue crabs during the wintertime and helps ensure their breeding success then in the spring.
And thank God for reference materials, their average nesting territory is 4.1 square kilometers. But they range huge. It's from 1.3 to 47.1 square kilometers is what they found. So really, as Joan identified, really varies by habitat.
Yeah, so that's quite a bit. I wonder, do those crabs result in a little change in the color of the feathers?
We haven't seen any blue cranes yet, no.
I mean,
yet.
I wondered if there's any tinting.
No, like flamingos, no.
I was thinking of the scarlet ibis
in
Trinidad and Venezuela area where there are certain crabs that they eat that. I mean, scarlet ibis is – scarlet is really a good good definition because it's like the brightest blaze orange kind of – I've ever seen.
It's striking.
Absolutely.
There may be people who are interested in getting involved in programs relating or helping whooping cranes. Joan, first,
Sure. There's several websites to go to. As David was mentioning, the project website is bringbackthecranes.org, and that is for this reintroduction effort. Within that website, you can connect up to the nine different partner websites, including the Crane Foundation, which is savingcranes.org. Operation Migration is operationmigration.org. So definitely we recommend, you know, going to these websites. There's a vast amount of knowledge and materials that you can download on the websites, yeah. And not only on whooping cranes, but on all the other species of cranes, especially on the ICF website. You can find information on sandhill cranes and other species.
And what about that great new DNR website that you've got? I love that website, by the way. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's going well so far. It's been a lot easier to navigate. We've been getting good reviews on it. So and another thing that we have is for teachers that want to get involved with the project, we have a very good education program. We have trunks available that have a lot of really interesting items in there that people can use, hands-on items, as well as a whole training manual for teachers if they want to contact me. It's davin.lopez@wisconsin.gov. I would be happy to set them up with one of these crane trunks. They can check them out and utilize them for their classrooms and or education, other educational opportunities. They're a really, really nice way to get involved and kind of introduce younger children to the program.
Oh, that's wonderful. And we'll put your address up on our Facebook page, too, in case they didn't get that down. Wow, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for coming by today. I really appreciate it. And we had quite a few people asking for, what do those hoopers sound like? Why didn't you play some hooping music? Well, we'll do that. We're going to find some, and we'll play it when Scott Craven's on. Next week on Wednesday, Scott Craven comes by. So if you're listening in and you want to know what a whooping crane sounds like, you will be able to hear that next Wednesday. And David, Joan, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you
for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Larry.
Great. David Lopez has been with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources since 2005. Last year, he joined the Bureau of Endangered Resources. One of his main duties is working with the Whooping Crane Eastern Partnership. He's the coordinator for the state. Joan Garland has been with us before. It's always great to see her. She's with the International Crane Foundation. She's the outreach coordinator there. And, of course, they're located in Baraboo. And she's accompanied the Whooping Cranes on their migration from Wisconsin to Florida. And tell you what, she's a lot of fun, and she knows what she's doing. So great to have her along, and I'm sure we'll probably have both of them back at some point. We're going to turn our attention to other areas. It's really inspiring, I think, to talk about whooping cranes and how they've been brought back from near extinction. But coming up next, Tom Heberlein comes by to talk about his new book. It's called Navigating Environmental Attitudes. And I think it's really kind of an eye-opening look at what works and what doesn't when it comes to enlisting the public to protect the environment. So I hope you'll stay tuned right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.